Funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The politicians return today to what's called a lame duck session of Congress. You'll be able to spot the Democrats. They're the ones limping in. Call last Tuesday's midterm elections what you will, but the results have Democrats burrowed away in back rooms, whispering on conference calls, trying to figure out what went wrong. The party's first step in remaking itself comes this Thursday when representatives choose a new House minority leader to succeed Richard Gephardt. The winner is expected to be Nancy Pelosi of San Francisco, who's already on the defensive, reacting to Republicans and some Democrats who charge that her politics are too liberal. She fights back by calling herself a mainstream Democrat.
Obviously, to win in the country, we have to go down the middle. I always treat politics like a tennis game. You may have your success to the right or the left in one shot or another, but then you come back to the middle for your perspective.
Pelosi has an upstart challenger, a young Tennessee moderate named Harold Ford Jr. Speaking on ABC this weekend, Congressman Ford made it clear he wants a referendum on the party itself.
This is about the direction of a party. This is about how we craft the message and convey a message, not only to Democrats, but to the American people.
Connection listeners, what do you expect to see out of the Democrats on Capitol Hill? Are they so out of sync with America? What does the party stand for, and what kind of opposition will it be in an even more Republican Washington? Join us at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we're going to spend the hour with a couple of Democratic thinkers from New York, Katrina Vandenhuvel, editor of The Nation, and from Washington, Ed Kilgore. He's policy director for the centrist Democratic Leadership Council. First, though, we're going to the Democratic Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey. She joins us on the phone from Washington. Hello.
Hello.
Tell me what will change with Nancy Pelosi as House leader.
Well, Nancy Pelosi is a true Democrat. She understands that government was in place in the first place to make sure that those that are the least among us have some chances in this world we live in. And along with that comes her background and her skills in leading the being the top Democrat on the Homeland Security Committee and the ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee. I mean, she has depth and breadth, and will bring a new, very fresh flavor to the Democratic Party.
She also
brings a lot of class.
Does it make a big difference to you that she's a woman?
No, it makes me proud of because she's a woman, because I'm a woman, but that doesn't have anything to do with Nancy's skills and her abilities. I mean, she is just plain good, and she's going to help the Democrats from the where she began the minute she was our minority whip.
Now, a lot of people make the accusation that Nancy Pelosi is a liberal, a progressive, too far on the left, one of those San Francisco Democrats. How do you get past that so people listen to what it is she?
Well, actually, Nancy doesn't rail about being a liberal Democrat. In fact, it would just be matter of fact that if taking care of our children, their families, our seniors, their health care is too liberal for this country, then we don't really understand what this country is about. But actually, with Nancy's leadership, we'll be able to solve some of the problems for those that need our help the most.
But Representative Woolsey, don't you have to make a change, not just in electoral terms, in offering a different face, some alternatives for voters to choose from, but also in just defining something that Democrats stand for?
And that's what Nancy will do, and she will be our leader in that regard. And I believe that's what Democrats across the country are clamoring for. Nancy is a new face. 8 months as our minority whip does not make her part of the old guard, believe me. And as the minority whip, she was able to get the Democrats working in consensus to make a statement on most of the votes we've had since she was sworn in as the whip.
Do you think that we'll see a shift in the party policy as regards the plans for an attack on Iraq? She, after all, voted against the resolution in the House.
Well, I think that she'll have a bigger voice in describing why she does not believe and why 133 of us voted against going to Iraq, and maybe the country will hear both sides of the issue with some opposition.
Congressman Woolsey, do you think it's going to be hard to be noticed in this next session, given the fact that the Democrats have neither control of the House or the Senate?
Well, it will be very hard to be noticed if the Democrats determine that their best effort is to become pale Republicans, then nobody will pay attention to us. But if we are the loyal opposition, if we are true Democrats, and Nancy, that's exactly who Nancy Pelosi is, if we follow her leadership, she has the tools that are needed to protect the United States with her experience and background with the Intelligence Committee and the Homeland Security group that she led, and we'll be a much better nation because we'll have both voices. We'll have a debate. We just won't be going along to get along.
Congresswoman, you used the term pale Republicans. Do you fear that's what the Democrats were posing as or offering to the voters in the midterms?
Well, you know, my district is just north of Nancy's across the Golden Gate Bridge. And certainly that's what I heard from my constituents.
That the party itself was a collection of pale Republicans, or
no,
that you were being warned not to be one?
No, that we were being much too cautious. Of course, in my district, I'd never get reelected if I was cautious. They want leaders who speak up, who say, this is the other side of an issue, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, and they will find Nancy Pelosi's leadership very refreshing.
Congresswoman, just stay with us for a couple of secs if you can. I want to bring Ed Kilgore in. He's policy director for the Centrist Democratic Leadership Council. Ed Kilgore, big shift this week on Capitol Hill. Any reservations?
Reservations about the Pelosi candidacy or
just about the general direction of the party?
Well, I think actually most Democrats, regardless of their ideological provenance, will agree that we didn't have a We either had a very unclear message or had the wrong message going into the midterm elections, that Republicans succeeded in blurring the distinctions between Democrats and Republicans, that we need a bolder, clearer
Republicans
message.
Blurred the distinction or Democrats blurred the distinction?
Well, I think Democrats made it easy for Republicans to blur the distinction. I might disagree with some of our other guests as to why. Democrats had an extremely narrow message focused on Medicare prescription drug benefits and attacking anybody that suggested we change Social Security. It was very easy for Republicans to say, well, we're for that too. We want a prescription drug benefit too. We're not going to touch Social Security. So in the end, Democrats really had no message at all. It wasn't really about ideology. It's not about Democrats being pale Republicans. It's about Democrats having such a narrow programmatic message that, you know, any idiot could blur the distinctions between the two parties. And I think that's why Democrats have to change.
Okay, tell me message. In what way you think that change will be marked by the election of Nancy Pelosi. Here's a straightforward question. If you had to choose between Harold Ford and Nancy Pelosi and you had a vote, who would you choose?
Well, the worst member of Congress has gotten a lot more votes than I ever will, so I hate to put myself in that position. We do.
Oh, come on, take a stand.
Well, I would vote for Harold Ford simply to send a message to the party as a whole and to the House Democratic Caucus that they really need to rethink the message. That narrow, easy-to-blur message really did come out of the House Democratic Caucus. Having said that, I don't think there's any question that Nancy Pelosi, who will almost certainly be the leader, you know, is smart enough, tough enough to understand that House Democrats are never going to achieve a majority unless they come up with a message that works in competitive districts, which are very unlike her district. Dick Gephardt, who had a very traditional liberal labor background, came to understand that, I think, pretty well. The important thing is that Nancy Pelosi and other House Democrats understand that their districts, which by and large are not competitive, are unlike the districts where Democrats have to win a majority in the House and in the country in 2004.
Let's hear from Katrina VandenHeuvel. Katrina, I would guess as editor of The Nation that given a choice, you would choose Nancy Pelosi over Harold Ford.
Well, I would choose a Democratic Party that at the moment, for the most part, and certainly in this election, is suffering from a passion deficit, a conviction deficit, a confidence deficit, and a coherence deficit. I mean, there is a reason as to why Mr. Kilgore said that the Democrats made it easy for Republicans to do some, as people have said, political cross-dressing, blurring the differences with Democrats on some key issues, but the Democrats aided and abetted the Republican strategy. I think that we are at a point in this country where the same forces that have produced both record electoral abstention and instability, a generation of economic decline and failed government response, have also generated an enormous potential market for a new progressive politics. I could tick off some of those issues, but Nancy Pelosi, I think, has a better chance as, you know, the new face of the Democratic Party, and there are systemic issues we should talk about too, but as the new face with ideas and a more coherent message, she could draw bright-line distinctions against where we want to take this country. And I think it's particularly important, just to conclude, against this Bush administration, which really has a set of interests that don't deal with the large concerns that working people struggle with every day and is indentured to corporations, which Democrats should take on, though the Democrats have their own liabilities in terms of the way our system is financed with so much money and corporations playing more and more of a role in politics.
Okay, Katrina, you see the way this party is covered, and I'm just curious to know whether or not, in your view, Nancy Pelosi is going to become the face of the party.
Well, the party, I mean, you need a horse to run a race, right? I mean, this country covers politics in such a horse race way, but she will become the new face of the party. But more important, I think she speaks to a politics that has some coherence for the Democratic Party. I mean, she comes out with all this talk about, by the way, that she's the left. For a moment, could we, perhaps consider what is the center and how that center has been redrawn? The trick is not to go to a center that has been pushed rightward, but bring the center to your positions. And she has a background speaking to the day-to-day bread and butter issues of this country's politics, as well as on international politics. I think she led effectively a caucus, 133 votes against the Iraq resolution, and you could make a strong argument that that is why Bush is now at the UN, because there's majority support in this country for multilateral solutions to
Katrina,
the world.
Katrina, I just want to hold you up for a minute because Congresswoman Woolsey has to leave, and I just wanted to hear, before you go, Representative, this selection of Representative Pelosi, does it say something larger about the direction of the party, or is that up to Nancy Pelosi to define herself?
No, I think Nancy Pelosi is defined. While the two other panelists were talking, I was remembering when I was a freshman and we were in the leadership, and Tom Foley was whatever you call it. Anyway, he was the leader, head of us right now. I don't remember what that is anymore. It's been so long. He was
speaker.
Our speaker. And anyway, he posed the question at a Democratic caucus. He said, well, as far as I'm concerned, there isn't a true 100% Democrat among us. And I want to tell you, I was a freshman. Nancy Pelosi stood up. She said, Mr. Speaker, I am 100% Democrat, and the whole room cheered. And that was 10 years ago.
Congresswoman will be watching next year when she gets a chance to reassert that as the leader of the House, assuming she's elected on Thursday. Of the minority leader. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Democratic Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey from California. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. A chance to poke through some of the remains of the midterms and look ahead to what's next for the Democratic Party. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WB.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. So what's up with the Democrats, or what's down with the Democrats? 1-800-423-8255. With me on the program today, Ed Kilgore. He's Policy Director for the Centrist Democratic Leadership Council. And Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor of The Nation magazine. And we're interested in hearing from you at 1-800-423-8255 about what should come next. I want to begin, if I can, with a couple of the parting words of Congresswoman Woolsey, who said, and I think I've got the quote right, it's been so long. So somebody has to define what it is the Democrats are supposed to do. What's the role? Is it the role of the opposition to oppose, to make a noise? Or is it something gentler than that? Ed Kilgore.
Well, it's a little of both, but I think we need to acknowledge something right off the bat. We're now in a presidential election cycle heading into 2004. We have quite an array of candidates already pretty much out there running for president. And I think it's likely, and it's probably a good thing, that the party's image will be defined by our presidential candidates rather than by, the Democratic caucus of the House of Representatives. By its very nature, in a presidential campaign, you can't dodge a large array of issues, as congressional Democrats have in the recent past. You got to talk about foreign affairs. You have to talk about the war on terror. You have to talk about the economy. You have to talk about a lot of issues.
But if all that gets talked about by a whole group of people who are all competing for attention, then it's just more squabbling within the Democratic Party, isn't it?
Not necessarily. I think there's a stronger consensus among Democrats right now than has been the case, certainly since about 1998. But we got it, and in some respects, having some differences of opinion within the party is healthy, particularly if it kind of reinforces the fact that we agree with each other a lot more than any of us agree with the Bush administration and the Republican Party, both of which are very vulnerable on a lot of the issues that Democrats have not been talking about.
Katrina.
Well, I think that's absolutely true that there are more differences with the Republican Party, but that's not the answer. I think that the Democratic Party needs to be an opposition party. Someone once said we have 1.5 political parties in this country. We need 2 vigorous, robust political parties. The Bush policy is my way or the highway, and I think, he comes in with what he wants. He says he wants cooperation, but in fact he wants you to roll over, and I think the Democratic Party needs to come in with a set of alternative policies. Let's begin with a growth agenda. I mean, this is one issue where the DLC and progressive Democrats disagree. The party has become a kind of neo-Hooverian in the Herbert Hoover tradition party, so that it's lost the ability to speak to a growth agenda and for ordinary working Americans. I think the Democratic Party, the whole issue of what a party is in our system is something we could talk about. But parties, I fear, have become vehicles for money raising and consultants. And instead of becoming a vehicle for opposition ideas, for working with a grassroots base, for expanding the electorate, we have 2 parties which both conspire to keep a restricted electorate because it's in their interest. So you only had, and I think Ed would agree with this, what do you have, 15 House races in play this season because of gerrymandering? So there, but one could tick off a whole series of issues, Ed, but that the Democrats could speak to effectively.
Katrina, let me just stop you there. If you're talking about redefining what it is the party stands for, are you saying that the party needs to move to where the people are, or that the party needs to go somewhere else and tell the people this is where it stands and hope that the people will follow?
Well, I think it's a mix of both. I think when I mentioned the passion deficit, I think the Democratic Party has blurred its agenda in such a way that it has lost the ability to mobilize and motivate millions of Americans who are seeking an alternative in the system. Now, the independent vote is growing. There's a turbulent electorate because people don't see it in the Democratic Party. And unless the party begins to speak to people's real-life bread-and-butter issues and also speak to issues that independents could relate to, and I'll say just one thing, which is opening up our media system. I mean, the whole issue of antitrust, the whole issue of kind of special interests and corporate abuse is something that at this critical moment the Democrats couldn't speak to effectively because so many of them are, because of so many have corporate ties. And one is for a mixed market economy, of course. But I think the Democrats, and I'll stop here, need an alternative narrative about how the economy works, how the corporate scandals connect to the lives of ordinary people, and why this kind of market fundamentalism that so defines America at this moment is itself a kind of ultimate corporate fraud that is hurting ordinary Americans.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to North Granby, Connecticut. Tim's joining us. Hi, Tim.
Good morning, Dick.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Great show. Well, 10 minutes ago, I had this great diatribe I was going to go on, but Katrina just articulated it so well, as always. The only thing that I would add is...
Well, what did you hear that you liked?
Well, what I liked is the fact that the Democrats certainly should be the opposition voice, and the Democratic Party, I believe, should really try to rally around some of these other groups like the Greens and the Libertarians and try to bring some of those folks back into the fold.
You're a Democrat, Tim?
Well, I'm starting to backpedal off of that a little bit. Yeah, yes, I am, but certainly am more aligned with Greens more than anything else at this point. But really the loyalty does go back to the Democratic Party because I think that we're not ready to have a real strong third-party voice as it relates to debates and part of the whole process. But what I would add to what Katrina said is, you know, is there a presidential candidate in 2 years who's willing to step up in a debate or in another forum to really challenge the Republicans and really challenge the process to say, you know what, I'm here to talk about something more other than a soundbite, really here to talk about the issues. And also, is there somebody...
Okay, Tim, let's take that and stay on the line, though, because I want to come back to you.
Yeah,
Katrina, who's the face, who's the voice, do we know yet?
Well, Mr. Kilgore referred to some of the candidates already emerging, and John Kerry is going to declare, obviously, Al Gore. But I do think what your caller said is right about at the moment we're working within a two-party system, and the ability to run a progressive Democrat within the Democratic Party to push what the late and great Senator Paul Wellstone called the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. There are a number of candidates. I think Dennis Kucinich is going to run. And he speaks to some of the bread and butter issues in a compelling way. He has a choice issue, which I think is very complicated in terms of the core constituencies of this party. Jan Schakowsky, a very impressive woman who has worked with Nancy Pelosi, a real organizer in the best sense of that word, who connects to ordinary people's lives. There are a number of people. And I think it's worth using the Democratic primaries to raise large non-soundbite issues about our system and about a Democratic Party message. And I think both of those candidates I mentioned, if they did run, would agree to support the Democratic nominee because the real issue, is in the end defeating the Bush.
Katrina, let me move it back to the present and go back to Tim in Connecticut. And Tim, what I need you to do is make the case to Ed Kilgore that the whole idea of redefining the party by turning more to the left, forgive me, Katrina, turning more to the progressive roots of the party is exactly where it needs to be, because I don't think Ed's on board with that the way you are. Tim, go ahead.
Well, I think going back to guiding principles, going back to the understanding that the party itself is for all of the people, not just for the upper 1%, I think that's first and foremost. Speaking to the issues that are affecting everyday people, I think the Bush administration tries to articulate that, tries to send that message, but I think really in the end fails. But I think that the Democrats have failed in highlighting that and bringing that to the fore. So I think that's one thing that that they all can concentrate on. And just if I can sort of digress for a moment to other areas that I think they should concentrate on, and that's the fact that there are significant issues within this administration that are yet unresolved. The Boston Globe came out just a few days ago. They've really traced this Harkin Energy thing back to George W. Bush. I mean, there's no way to get around that. Why was that not talked about in the last election, certainly in the last couple of weeks? They somehow have really fallen on that. And then there's also, obviously...
Okay, let's not just go through the laundry list, because what we're really trying to figure out is not what it is that the Democrats are going to find to oppose, but what it is they're going to stand for. Ed, the conversation that you're listening to with Katrina and Tim, reservations?
Well, not so much reservations. I'm a little more optimistic, I guess, that Democrats, if they learn the right lessons from the last campaign, really can provide a clear progressive alternative. And I don't think you have to lurch off the end to support Dennis Kucinich or Jan Schakowsky to do so. I mean, let me just give you an example.
That's a lurch off the end to go to those candidates?
Well, the mainstream candidates, I think, are well positioned to do what I think Katrina and Tim are actually talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, let me just give you a quick example. I mean, Democrats just could not figure out what to say during this last election about the economic policies of this country, other than deploring the collapse of the stock market and the growing signs of weaknesses, and particularly couldn't figure out what to say about the Bush tax cuts since some Democrats voted for them. But three presidential candidates are out there pretty much right now. John Kerry of Massachusetts, John Edwards of North Carolina, and Joe Lieberman of Connecticut have all pretty much, I think, laid out the line that I think Democrats will wind up pursuing in 2004, that we need a combination of short-term stimulus to revive the economy and to pay for it with long-term discipline. All three of those candidates have come out for freezing or repealing the Bush tax cuts, benefiting the wealthy that are going to go into effect in a few years, and instead focusing on short-term stimulus for the American economy and for, you know, meeting some of the big challenges we face. That's a progressive message. It's very different from the Republican message. And these are mainstream candidates.
You taking notes on this, Katrina? Mainstream candidates.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the whole use of this, the language, the categories, as I said earlier about how in the center has moved, you know, rightward. I think we could talk top down instead of left right. I think we could talk common sense, bread and butter issues. But, you know, I think, yes, many of the candidates running or who will run from the sort of center progressive wing of the Democratic Party. On the other hand, they won't speak to some of the large unmet needs of this country because they are bound in by a variety of factors. But, for example, national health insurance, clean money, public funding of elections, so to speak, federal chartering of corporations, a true stimulus, large stimulus plan, and fight to open up our system. I think this is an issue that appeals to independents in important ways, meaning media democracy, election day voter registration, instant runoff voting. So opening up the system to more voices and more competition. And finally, I think the candidates I mentioned, and again, there are others. I hope someone comes forward, but Kucinich and Schakowsky would work, as Paul Wellstone tried to build a progressive movement, because you need that inside-outside mobilization. The Democratic Party, without people working outside at the local state level, will not be as strong as it can be and should be in these coming years, because the right has very successfully built up the institutions on their side that we need to take a page out of their playbook to do and do effectively.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Tim, thanks for your call to Providence, Rhode Island. Tom's on the line. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I want to take issue with your characterization of the Democratic Leadership Council as a centrist organization. I would maintain it's a right-wing organization. It really doesn't belong in the Democratic Party, and that their strategies have failed us. They provided us with Al Gore as a candidate, and he lost not because he was running too far to the left, but because he was running too far to the right.
He did win.
He did, and if I hadn't been in a state where he was a shoo-in, I would have voted for him. But I voted for Ralph Nader to make the point that someone pretending to be a Republican cannot win the presidential election as a Democrat.
Ed Kilgore.
Well, all I can say, I mean, there are folks in the Green Party in particular that love to demonize the Democratic Leadership Council, but all I can say is
I don't want
this.
To demonize you, sir. What is the Democratic agenda?
Sir, we had zero to do with the Democratic message of this last election year. We criticized it all year long, said it was going to allow Republicans to blur the distinction, said it was brain dead, said Democrats needed to talk about a broader array of issues, and I think we were actually right. But if anybody that can take a serious look at what, you know, DLC-type Democrats stand for and believe and can't tell the difference between that and the Republicans is not looking very hard. And I do think, again, I'll say it a second time, I think that all Democrats have a lot more in common with each other than they have with the Republicans. And, you know, I realize that some Democrats have defected to the Green Party, but a lot more Democrats have defected to the Republicans or simply aren't voting, and I think that's what we ought to focus on.
We elected a Green Party city council here in one of the most Democratic cities in the country, and I wish people in your wing of the party would get the message.
But I have to say, speaking from another wing of the Democratic Party, I think some of the local state victories of the Greens are very important. We do have a piece in the next issue of The Nation. It's called simply Ralph, Don't Run, because we believe, you know, that we are, unfortunately, until we open up the political capacity of our system, it is a two-party lock. And
oh,
that
I
it's
absolutely
a crucial,
agree
yeah,
with you. And okay. If I had been in a state where it would have made a difference to vote to Al Gore for Al Gore, I would have done so. But I really think if you look at I agree with those
Tom,
people
it's Dick Gordon here. I wonder if I can ask you what it is about the Democratic Party that allows you and me and others to have this conversation about where is it, what does it stand for, should it be left, should it be right, all these splits and all these divisions, and that same conversation doesn't plague the Republicans.
Well, we're not a top-down party, and that's one of the good things about it.
So the debate is a good thing.
It is.
So why are you giving the DLC a hard time for being at one side?
Well, in part, I'm giving you a hard time for representing them as centrist. I don't think that the DLC represents the center of the Democratic Party.
I mean, I use the word centrist in the political spectrum, not center of the Democratic Party.
Okay.
I don't know whether or not that buys me any currency.
Well, and Mr. Kilgore's argument is that he criticized the Democratic agenda in the 2002 election. What about the 2000 election? You've already mentioned we're in another presidential cycle already, and the DLC-type platform is going to bring us the same results next time.
Well, I don't think it was the DLC parts of the Al Gore platform in 2000 that necessarily cost us technically a defeat. I agree with Katrina. Al Gore got more votes. But at any rate, a lot of the problems with the Democratic Party message, and I hope we can all agree on this, is not that it's too far to the left or too far to the right or too far to the center. It's just not very imaginative and it's not very comprehensive.
And as
you know,
I said earlier,
a party that can't bring itself to talk about, you know, 20 of the 25 major issues facing the country isn't very inspiring to its base or very convincing to swing voters or independents either. And that's what we've got to change.
Yeah, I mean, just two points. I mean, again, let's not forget that the majority party in this country is the party of non-voters. How the Democratic Party begins to speak to those voters, non-voters, has something to do with your caller's question, which is we should begin to appropriate, pick up some of the values and issues some of the third parties speak to. And I think open up. And that might bring in younger voters, people of color who did not turn out in ways this midterm because they felt issues were just not addressed, a whole series of things. But I think there is a passion and conviction deficit and, of course, a systemic deficit.
Connection listeners, it is a pivotal moment for the Democratic Party. This is the week when it's likely that Nancy Pelosi will be chosen to lead them in the House. That will point one direction for the party. We're talking about the self-examination that's going on in different parts of the country and among different Democrats. We'd also like to hear from some Republicans, maybe some recipes for success from the other side. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's Ed.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. This hour, a conversation about the future of the Democratic Party with Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor of The Nation, Ed Kilgore, policy director for the Democratic Leadership Council. You noticed I dropped the word centrist there, Ed, just in deference.
Well, we like to use the word progressive ourselves, and I'm sure that would upset Katrina even more.
I think these categories are open. I think it's more about walking the walk, not talking the talk.
You know,
though,
we've done a lot of programs about the plans for a war in Iraq, and one of the things that keeps coming up on that is this hand-wringing notion that it doesn't really matter how far you look ahead that the generals are still fighting the last war. And I can't help but think that the whole notion of Clintonism, that without Clinton is a large part of what plagues the Democrats today, that moving past what Bill Clinton turned the party into is a big hurdle.
Well, I agree in part. I think that a lot of folks in the party recognize that Bill Clinton took away some of the kind of the negative perceptions of the Democratic Party that had hurt us over the years, being indifferent to a lot of issues like crime and welfare dependency. But then I think a lot of Democrats thought, well, fine, we've taken away two of our problems. Everything's fine now. We can go back to being what we've always been. And I don't think there's much of a reform impulse in the Democratic Party anymore. And bringing it back to the original topic
you're saying
we were
there should
talking
be.
About. Yes, I think we need to constantly reevaluate what we stand for as Democrats, how you express that in terms of broad themes, what it means in terms of programs. I mean, one of the things that bothered us about the last campaign is, you know, this notion that Democrats were running around demanding, you know, pledges from candidates never to even think about changing the Social Security program. I mean, that's the kind of reactionary thinking that identifies the Democratic Party with not just with the status quo, but the past in a way that makes it almost impossible for us to oppose as progressives.
Katrina, what about
that kind of fresh energy Bill Clinton did provide, whether you agreed with him or not, and I think we've lost a lot of that.
But is Clinton and Gore now a ball and chain on the party, Katrina?
Well, when I think of Bill Clinton, I think of, you know, on social issue, on many social issues, he really represented the more tolerant America. But he was, as I said earlier, kind of neo-Hoover in that he, you know, he pledged himself without to this idea that deficits are always bad and the national debt should be eliminated. I think that constrains Democrats from thinking in bolder terms at a time when education, healthcare, other programs for poor and working families need investment. This country needs an investment.
Right, but does the constraint exist today, that same constraint?
Well, there's a different constraint today. Kevin Phillips, the writer and thinker, said something I thought interesting last week, which is we're not constrained so much by the vital center, though that is a constraint, as the venal center. And I think Clinton and the Republicans are certainly both part of this problem. And Terry McAuliffe, I mean, until we get public financing of elections, the green demon, the scourge of money in politics, will never allow for a level playing field or a full range of ideas. And if I might just add finally, this idea of, you know, saying someone who speaks for a true progressivism or, you know, for bread and butter issues is a throwback or is someone of the past, not the party's future. Excuse me, this came up when Senator Wellstone died. I mean, he was a man who championed health care for all, investing in education, minimum wage, clean air and water, holding CEOs accountable, empowering workers, and Social Security.
Yeah, and he stood out in the party because he was one of the few people who was doing that.
He stood out, though. He was a member of the Progressive Caucus, the largest caucus in the House, from which Nancy Pelosi, Jan Schakowsky, right. Dennis Kucinich come from. And that is not the party's past. That is the party's future in terms of connecting to ordinary people's lives and a larger constituency in this country.
Let's go back to some of our listeners. 1-800-423-8255 to Tonawanda, New York. Mary's joining us. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Well, everyone's going to hate me for saying this.
Show, Mary?
Because you're all much too polite and too gentrified, really, for my taste. I think it's about time to take a page out of the Republicans' book and get really kind of nasty.
Like what?
Well, for example, Newt Gingrich succeeded very well, even though he's out of the picture now, but he succeeded and his ilk succeeded in making liberal a four-letter word. And in 2 years, Democrat will be the four-letter word as well. And I wrote to everybody under the sun before the election saying, where are you people? I don't hear anybody saying anything about anything.
So what has to change?
Well, I think that maybe Democrats ought to hire a very good PR firm and cut through all the people's lassitude and interest in killers and reality shows and wherever their attention is and come up with some good, strong language.
Give me something, Mary.
The Republicans. I mean, the Republicans certainly wouldn't lie back and say, "Oh dear, I think we should be more like the Democrats in order to get reelected."
Okay, so what would your contract with America be, Mary? What would be number one on your Democratic contract with America?
Well, look, I'm an old, I guess, out of the picture, according to some people on your program, Roosevelt Democrat. So, I mean, I am with Paul Wellstone, but with a kind of a nastier voice. I think we need a nasty voice. I think we're all way too polite, and I think we just cave in every which way.
I think we need to do it with a passionate voice and a joyful voice and a voice leading toward a hopeful future for all Americans. toward what I think it was Mary said, yes, I said earlier we could take a page out of the playbook, the Republican playbook, but until we can't do that effectively until there is a progressive infrastructure. There are groups working to build that, state, local, national levels. Campaign for America's Future in Washington, D.C. is one. There is a network, and we need to be tireless in broadcasting a consistent progressive message that is coherent. That takes media, as Mary said, but it also takes, you know, agreeing to coherence and a progressive message.
Okay, Ed Kilgore, but Mary used the word a nasty voice, something that gets noticed.
Well, I don't think you have to be nasty to get noticed. And, I mean, all the evidence I've ever seen is that independent voters in particular, which, and that's the plurality party in the United States right now, not Democrats or Republicans, do not like negative campaigning. You can be clear, you can be consistent, you can provide a clear contrast with the opposition. One thing that does worry me a little bit, and I hope this isn't what Mary's talking about, you know, the Republicans nearly immolated themselves in the late 90s by buying into, you know, essentially the Bill Clinton is evil theory. They really became obsessed with him, you know, partly because they couldn't understand why he was beating them. And a lot of Democrats, probably most Democrats privately, have a similar view of George W. Bush. You know, he's stupid, he's satanic, whatever. That kind of message may make Democrats feel pretty good about themselves or about their superiority, but I don't think it's going to work in the presidential election of 2004. Like it or not, George W. Bush does connect with a lot of Americans at a very basic values level, and we're going to have to take him seriously.
1-800-423-8255. Mary, thanks for your call. To Portsmouth, Virginia now. Scott's on the line. Hello, Scott.
Yes, I just I'm a Republican, and I just wanted to call in. None of your guests seem to have looked at the possibility that maybe the Democrats were communicating their values and positions just fine, and then it may be the American people just rejected them.
I don't buy that because, as I said earlier, I really think there is a real potential, enormous potential market for progressive politics in this country. I think this was a campaign marked by the blurring of messages, by negative advertising, and by a lack of coherence and punch on the part of a Democratic opposition. I think a progressive politics that blames the American people is dead on arrival.
Well, I would have to say that for those Republicans who think the president has some sort of mandate, we've been talking a lot on this show about how Democrats don't have a clear message. Well, Republicans really weren't offering the country much on a lot of the same issues that Democrats were silent on. I don't think the Republican Party has an economic policy at all. The Republican Party denies we have environmental problems. They don't have any kind of energy policy other than drilling for oil. They're basically uninterested in universal access to health care. So I think on both, I don't think there was a mandate in either direction in this last election because nobody was talking about a big majority of the issues.
Scott, do you buy that?
Well, I just kind of think if you look at history, both Bill Clinton and Al Gore ran basically on conservative values. They basically are Republican values. They just toned them down a little bit and activized their base. It doesn't seem like that in the past, if you want to get elected, you run as a Republican and legislate, I guess, as a Democrat.
So, Scott, here's this other party choosing Nancy Pelosi, who, for want of some description that somebody's not going to quarrel with, is liberal, left, or progressive,
right,
and that's going to be the public face of the party. What difference is that going to make?
Well, I'll be honest with you, as a Republican, I don't know one Republican who's afraid of that. It seems to me that most of them are salivating at the fact that she could be the next leader of the face of the Democratic Party, that they could demonize her much like the Republicans did with Newt Gingrich.
Katrina, what is it about the Democrats that they are always responding to what the Republicans say about them, that it's this choice of person that works for them or it's that policy which plays for the Republican Party? There's been a whole lot of answering Republican charges rather than just elbowing that aside and putting one's own message out.
Well, I think it goes back to this ability to be a coherent, confident party. The party is divided, and I think I think that Nancy Pelosi's selection is a confident sign that if you can speak to the American people with a message and trust Americans, if they can get the news, to be with you, because I do believe there are reform majorities in this country, the party will be less reactive. Of course, you have a president in the White House, a Republican president. That's always difficult for a Democratic Party. I don't think he walks on water. I think his polling shows that he's about where his father was at this time in his administration. I think we have to see how the economy unfolds. The Democrats need to be ready with a coherent alternative, a positive one, and the war. If there is a war and it goes badly, you know, I think the Democrats can speak to how they supported multilateral action and speak to how the war in Iraq, so many of them have said, including Al Gore, that it undermines the real fight against terrorism.
Scott, thanks very much for your call.
Certainly.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Ed Kilgore, there's the line that if the Democrats can articulate a vision that old time, long time, new Democrats will come to the party. And also the line that the party needs to go a little bit to the left. Now, you're not crazy about that, but if nothing else works, is that an option?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that if Democrats talk about some issues that they haven't been talking about, maybe some like universal access to health care, that might be perceived by some as a move to the left. I don't think so. I think it's simply talking about the issues the American people care about. We've all at the DLC, we've always hated this idea that parties own issues, you know, that Democrats can only talk about these three or four things. Republicans can only talk about these three or four things. One of the reasons we're in trouble in the next presidential race is that we've forgotten how to talk about foreign affairs. Democrats need to have a clear, credible message on the full range of issues facing the American people. Some people will perceive that as a move to the left, some as a move to the center. We don't really care. It's offering the American people a clear, progressive alternative to a very conservative administration, and you can call it whatever you want.
Katrina Van den Heuvel, I'm just wondering whether or not, as we've discussed on the program, the focus in your mind should be on 2004 and the presidential election, or whether or not the Democratic Party has that luxury of time to set aside establishing, reestablishing an identity right now.
Oh, I think the party has to operate on three fronts. One is, of course, 2004 to take the White House back from Bush. But I think, you know, in the short term, it needs to work with Nancy Pelosi, defining a coherent Democratic Party message. I think in the longer term, as I said earlier, it needs to build a progressive work in helping build a progressive infrastructure in this country. There is a reason why Gingrich and his ilk and the Republicans are strong, and it goes back to 25, 30 years of building an infrastructure, Heritage, Cato, American Enterprise, building a conveyor belt of media communications, building a strong base of state legislators. I think we need to build what is ALEC or a GOPAC for the progressive side and work from the bottom up and work with advocacy and activist groups. So three fronts. I think you've got the shorter term and the long term.
Thank you both for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Katrina Van den Heuvel, editor of The Nation. Ed Kilgore, policy director for the Democratic Leadership Council. Earlier in the program, we talked with Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey, Democrat of California. Connection listeners, you can continue the conversation online. We're at theconnection.org. We had help with our program today from Kim Bichari, Dara Manoogian, Brian Myers, and Carl Volker. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Orit Karitsky-Fox, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Russo, and Doug Shugarts. Graham Smith is our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is WBUR. Up next on The Connection, the case against